This is Bev.
And this is Diz.
And this is
Trigger Warning.
So today is my turn to tell you a story.
Storytelling time.
And so starting with Trigger Warnings, because that's the name of the podcast. Trigger Warning today for child death. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much the worst of it. There's murder, but you're listening to a true crime / survival / disaster podcast. There's going to be death in it. So the main trigger warning there is child death. Okay, so let's get started because we don't have business yet. We're just too new for that. So we're talking about Wendy Camp. She was born Wendy Taylor on March 1st, 1969 to Jackie and Edwin Knox Taylor.
Ooh.
A cool freaking name for her.
Very
Edwin
cool.
Knox Taylor. I'm like, very yes, awesome.
Yeah.
She grew up on a large farm, and in high school she was very popular. She had a lot of friends. She was smart. And she wanted to be a veterinarian when she grew up.
Oh.
As a teenager, though, she fell in love with a man named Christopher Brito, who was not from the U.S. One source I found said that he was either from Kuwait or Sri Lanka. I'm not
sure
which.
That's different.
When she was 16, she got pregnant. She had their daughter, Cynthia Brito, on January 17th, 1986.
Okay.
So Wendy and Christopher got married, but about 6 months after Cynthia was born, Wendy's family pretty much just said, no, we don't want you to be married to him. We don't really want him around.
Oh, wow.
So they divorced, and Christopher returned to his home country. So he was never really in his daughter's life. So, as a single mother, Wendy ended up getting a job at a fast food restaurant,
mm-hmm.
and this was in Oklahoma, and in the spring of 1987, she fell in love with her coworker, Chad Noe. That's Noe, N-O-E. They began dating. She got pregnant with her second child, Jonathan. Chad convinced Wendy to marry him. They got married about 1 month before Jonathan was born. And I couldn't find his exact date of birth, but it would have been in, like, 1988.
Okay.
I looked everywhere trying to find this little boy's date of birth, and yeah. I could not find it anywhere. About a month after he was born, Wendy complained one day of not being able to swallow very well.
Oh.
And so her sister took her to the hospital, and pretty quickly she fell into a coma.
Oh, my gosh.
About 2 weeks later, the doctors had finally determined that she had MS, multiple sclerosis.
Oh my gosh.
So she was in a coma, and not too far into it, I saw like a couple weeks, I saw like a month, I don't know, but Chad told her family that he didn't want to be a single father of two children, and he didn't know what kind of health she would be in if she ever woke up, so he filed for divorce and got custody of their baby, Jonathan. Wendy's family took care of Cynthia, and then Beverly Noe, who's Chad's mother, took care of Jonathan. And Chad ended up getting custody, but according to his family and Wendy's family, he wasn't taking care of Jonathan. His mother Beverly,
was.
Had her, like, that had him. She was the one that, basically, he lived with her, she raised him. And then Beverly's mother, Ida Pruitt, so Chad's grandmother, also looked after Jonathan some. But he lived with Beverly and she raised him, period.
Wow.
And it actually turned out that she secretly filed for and got custody of Jonathan. So,
without her son knowing?
Apparently, I'm not sure. The source said that it was because that Chad had multiple children out of wedlock, and a few of the children were mothered by teenage girls.
So he was an adult?
Yeah. Yeah, he was an adult.
Gross.
So, according to this one source that mm-hmm. I found that in, that's why she was able to get custody, was because he had a bunch of babies with different women, and some of them were underage.
Okay.
I'm like, to me, if that seemed to matter all that much, then they would have just been like, well, he needs to be arrested if he's having relations with underage girls. But anyway.
Apparently in the 80s, they
also,
weren't all that
he was involved in drugs. So,
brother.
Wendy's family did not know that she had supposedly gotten custody of Jonathan. Wendy woke up 16 months after falling into the coma.
Oh, wow.
She was in absolutely no condition to fight for custody or rights or anything because she had to learn to walk and talk and eat and write and do everything over again.
Yeah.
Physical therapy because her muscles had kind of atrophied and everything. And just basically learn to live normal everyday life like we all take for granted.
Yeah.
While she was in the hospital doing rehabilitation and everything, she met a man named Leon Camp. And they became close, and Leon, unlike Chad, was willing to be with her despite her physical difficulties. And they got married in 1990.
Okay.
So once Wendy was discharged from the hospital, she, Leon, and Cynthia went and lived together, and by all accounts were a happy little family.
Yay.
So Wendy wasn't 100% yet, but she improved enough that she asked for and received weekend visitation with Jonathan. Because keep in mind, she had him, and a month later, she was gone. So she missed all of the baby stuff.
Yeah.
You know, he was 16 months old at this point.
Yeah, he's a toddler.
So at first, everything went smoothly, and they were doing visitation and everything. But it wasn't too long before the No family started making things difficult for Wendy to see him. According to Wendy's family, Wendy would make arrangements with Beverly, who still had primary custody of him. I would say at least physical custody. I don't know that if she actually got legal custody of him,
mm-hmm.
because without the mother or the father signing off on it, unless maybe the dad did sign off on it,
eventually,
but I don't know. So I don't want to say for sure that that's a fact because I only found that one source that she filed for
physical,
and got custody.
Because he actually lived with her.
But technically she was the one that was taking care of him. Mm-hmm. So, she would make arrangements with her, and then when she showed up, Beverly and Jonathan wouldn't be there. So they would be like, oh, wrong weekend, we decided to go to Six Flags over Texas, or we decided to go do this, or, you know, we were at the grocery store, we forgot it was today, or whatever. It's like, they would make sure that they
liars.
Just weren't there. Yeah. So, finally, Chad told Wendy that she couldn't take Jonathan for visitation at her house, because they believed he was being molested by Leon Camp, her new husband.
Oh my gosh.
There was no way that this had happened. Because Beverly was present every time that they took care of Jonathan. So it's like, if he was molesting him, how was he doing it in front of Beverly?
In front of her.
Yeah. So it was just another excuse to not let her see him. And,
Power trip.
Yeah, so Wendy and Leon kept fighting for visitation, and Wendy reminded the courts that she had never signed over any parental rights. She was in a coma when Chad took the baby and everything. But apparently the courts just were like, oh, well.
Sorry.
Yeah, we don't.
Too bad.
Oh, well. So after a thorough investigation, however, they determined that there was no evidence that he was being molested, and the court ordered that Beverly and Chad allow Wendy to have visitation with Jonathan. Chad and Beverly were cited for contempt for not holding up that order because she had a visitation order.
About dang time.
But they still refused to let her see him.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. In fact, Beverly actually took Jonathan at one point and went into hiding. They lived out of a motorhome and traveled around the country. There was a YouTube video I watched on this, and they were interviewing one of their relatives that lived in Texas, and she said they just showed up one day, her and Jonathan. And she was like, I don't want to be a part of this. She knew there was custody battle. She knew there was stuff going on. She's like, I don't want to be involved. So she was like, they can come in and visit, but then they got to go. So Wendy's family actually paid for a private investigator for a while. But when the money ran out and they couldn't afford to pay him anymore, Wendy's father, Edwin Knox Taylor, because it's a cool name.
Yeah, it is.
Obtained a private investigator's license so he could go look.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I'm like, what a good grandpa.
That's fair. And he's got the name.
I know. He's got an awesome name for a private investigator.
For reals.
So at some point, Beverly and Jonathan turned back up. Nobody knows if this was because of Wendy's father looking for them mm-hmm. or if Beverly just turned herself in willingly. But either way, she was ordered again to let Wendy see Jonathan.
How is she being allowed to
keep him? To even keep him. I know. She kidnapped him, essentially.
And sounds like she crossed state lines, yeah. too. That's a whole nother...
Yeah, exactly.
That's a federal offense.
Yeah. And I think now it would be looked at a lot
Yeah, that's true. This different. Is like you the know, this early is, 90s.
Yeah, this... Yeah. Yeah. This was in 92.
Okay. But I still...
Think, or not, well, maybe before that, 90. 90, late 91. 80s, early 90s. Yeah.
Yeah, because yeah, her and Leon got married in 90, right?
Right. Yeah.
Wendy and... Yeah.
Wendy's family, this is my next line on my paper here, they wonder why she wasn't ordered to turn custody back over.
That's a fantastic question.
They wonder
question.
To this day, you know.
That blows my mind.
Her health was stable. She had a limp and a few other issues, but she was overall stable with her illness. She was on medication. She had a safe and happy home. She had his half-sister,
more
who was
than
six,
capable.
You know, there or whatever. And she had never signed her rights over. So they still are just like, why
That's
did they not give
crazy.
Her custody? Beverly continued to have primary custody. So on May 29th, 1992, Chad Noe called Wendy out of the blue and offered to let her see Jonathan. And he said that his mother, Beverly, was willing to drive for 2 hours to come pick her up, take her to her house so she could see Jonathan, and then drive her the 2 hours back to where she lived.
Red flag, maybe?
I know.
That's a little strange.
Exactly. So Wendy was excited, but Leon looked at it kind of the way we just did.
Yeah.
He was sus, and he was like, So he was like, it's unplanned. They never offer anything like
and
this.
And for they Chad never... to call, too.
Yeah, exactly. He wanted to go with her, but then when Beverly came to pick her up, she refused to let him come. So Leon was like, okay, fine. But my sister is going to go with you. So his sister's Lisa Krager. And he said Cynthia wanted to see her little brother. So he was like, Cynthia and Lisa are going. So he said that Beverly seemed agitated, but finally agreed that Lisa and Cynthia could go with Wendy. Both of them left. Or they all three left. Yeah. And Wendy called Leon or her mother, depending on the source, or maybe both, mm-hmm. around 1:40 when they got into Shamrock, Oklahoma, which was where Beverly lived.
And this was like afternoon?
Yeah, this was a couple hours okay. later. Yeah, 1:40 in the afternoon. She said they were at a restaurant waiting for Chad to get there because he lived in a different town. So obviously he wasn't taking care of his kid. His mother was.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so Wendy, Lisa, and Cynthia stayed for a couple hours and visited. And according to Chad and Beverly and Ida Pruitt, who's Chad's grandmother, everything went smoothly or whatever.
And they got to see Jonathan and everything.
And they got to see Jonathan, hung out for a couple hours. I think Ida Pruitt said that Jonathan and Cynthia mostly played, and Wendy kind of sat and chatted with Chad for a while, basically.
Were they at the house, or did they stay at, like, that little...
At Beverly's house, apparently.
Beverly's, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, around 4:45, Wendy called again, either Leon or her mother or both.
Uh-huh.
And so they were getting ready to hit the road to come back home. She said that they had stopped at a convenience store, and Beverly bought Cynthia some chips and a drink at the convenience store, and that they'd be back in a couple hours, and we'll see ya. That was 4:45. 2 hours would have made it around 7,
yeah.
getting home. By 8 o'clock, Leon was worried.
Yeah.
So he had not seen his sister, his wife, his stepdaughter. So he called Wendy's parents, and they called the police. The police spoke with Beverly, and she said that her plan was to drive them to Oklahoma City, where they lived, and then drive to Cushing, Oklahoma, to meet Chad at a restaurant for dinner. Beverly told authorities that her mother, Chad's grandmother, Ida, was riding along with them at first, but she said that about half hour into the drive, Ida demanded that Beverly drop her off at home. Because she said, according to Ida, Wendy was arguing with them during the drive back about not being able to see Jonathan and about how difficult it had been to get visitation and all this, and stated that Wendy was, quote, griping and bitching, and that's all she could do. And she told Beverly, you have to put up with this, but I don't. Take me home. So, according to Beverly and Ida, Ida was dropped off around 5:15 at her house, and Beverly continued on with Wendy, Cynthia, and Lisa. They were about 45 minutes away from Oklahoma City when Beverly said she couldn't take any more of Wendy. And according to her, Wendy had continued arguing the entire ride, and she'd had enough. So this woman claims that she pulled into Walmart in Chandler, Oklahoma, 45 minutes from where Wendy lived, and ordered them out of her car.
Wendy, Lisa, and Cynthia.
And Cynthia, who's six years old.
Wendy's
23, Lisa's 22, and then Cynthia, who's six.
And they're less than an hour away from...
Yeah, less than an hour, but she couldn't take it anymore. So she pulled in Walmart's parking lot and was like, get out, I'm done. They got out of the car. They were never seen again. She said that she thought they would get a ride or that they would call Leon. I'm like, get a ride with who? Yeah, you thought they would hitchhike or something? They have a small child with
like
them.
It's like 92 or whatever. Yeah. It's like...
So it's like, okay, well, I guess they could have gone in Walmart and called Leon and been like, can you come pick us up at the Walmart in Chandler?
Yeah.
But nothing. So the police began a search. They had airplanes out searching 5 counties. I don't know how they thought the women were going to get somewhere in 5 counties on foot.
Especially
with
a 6-year-old.
Yeah. The employees at Walmart could never verify that they saw her.
Did they have, like,
surveillance
cameras?
Yeah, I mean, it was, like,
cameras?
Two women and a 6-year-old. I mean, they would blend into Walmart. It would be hard for, you know, unless there was an argument or the kid was throwing a fit or something like that. It would be hard to remember that group.
Did they not have surveillance?
No.
At the time,
the Walmart did not have a surveillance system.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I know it's a different time, but...
And they actually, they were thinking, you know... Like I said, they would blend into a crowd. It would be hard to spot. But Wendy still had her limp.
Mm.
And she was wearing a bright red sweatshirt and sweatpants. Matching red.
Oh, my.
Bright red.
Welcome to the 90s.
Yeah. So they were kind of like, well, maybe she would have stood
maybe
out.
Maybe somebody would have remembered.
Yeah. Nobody remembered seeing them. So they couldn't confirm that they even went in Walmart.
Well, so, and she says she dropped them off. She could have dropped them off at the... very edge of the parking lot or whatever.
Yeah,
doesn't
the very
mean she
back
was, like,
of it.
Right at the front.
Exactly. They also, of course, they automatically think, okay, maybe she didn't want to go home. Maybe they disappeared on purpose. But there was no reason for that.
That's
because
crazy.
Wendy and Leon were happy. Cynthia was well-adjusted and happy. She loved her mother. She loved Leon. Leon had been the only father she ever really knew.
Yeah.
Because her dad was gone when she was 6 months old. He
went
back to his own country. She didn't know him.
And Chad wasn't in the picture.
And yeah, Chad was useless. So, yeah. So, Leon, she called him Daddy.
Aww.
Yeah. And according to her, Wendy's family, Wendy was a housewife. She enjoyed camping, fishing, going to church, spending time with family. Cynthia was described as, quote, a very bright little girl who liked going to school, playing with toys, and visiting her grandparents.
Oh, a little girl. She's so cute.
Lisa Krager was 22. She enjoyed spending time with her kids and writing letters to her husband, Mike. Mike said of her, quote, Lisa was a cheerful person. She liked to laugh. In addition to their happy lives, so there's no reason for them to run off, Wendy also had medication to keep her MS in check. If she didn't take it at regular times, not only would her symptoms flare up, but she could die.
Yeah.
She had to take her medicine. So she hadn't taken them with her because she thought that she'd be home between 7 and 7:30. There would have been, like, for her to, like, purposely disappear would have meant she was giving herself a death sentence.
Yeah, there's no reason for her to do that.
She would have had to go home to get her meds. The police immediately started suspecting Chad and his family, of course.
Of course.
Chad was interviewed by the police. He said the last time he saw them was when they got in the car at his mother's house to start the 2-hour drive back to Wendy's home. Chad agreed to take a polygraph, and the polygraph showed that he was being truthful. Then, on June 2nd, 1992, so this was like 5 days later, Beverly Noe's former sister-in-law, so her ex-husband's sister, told detectives, her name's Coyla Parks, told detectives that she had spoken with Beverly about 3 weeks prior to the disappearance. And according to her, Beverly told her that if it came down to having to give Jonathan to Wendy, she would kill Wendy.
Oh my gosh!
So this former sister-in-law, Coyla, she also told police that her brother, Beverly's ex-husband, had also told her once that Beverly owned a .357 revolver and carried it with her during court proceedings regarding Jonathan's visitation and custody. That she took it in the courthouse with her. That astounds me.
What?
Because these days you can't go anywhere without metal detectors, and they would have tackled you to the ground if
and
you tried.
And a 357 sounds like it would be big.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, the courthouse where we went to get our marriage license was... You can't take your purse in there.
No, you can't even take a cell phone
anymore.
You can't have an electronic on you.
So,
of course, this was the 90s, yeah. So I know it's
different. Yeah, it was 1992, still. Well, 90 through 92, so I guess. But according to her ex-husband, she carried that revolver with her when she went to court hearings. I don't know what her plan was. Like, if they told her that Jonathan would have to go with Wendy, that she was planning to do something then. I'm not sure.
Oh, my gosh.
Unfortunately, this was hearsay and was not hard evidence, and the police had no leads to follow. About a week after the disappearances, a $5,000 reward was offered for tips, but they got tips, I'm sure, but nothing panned out.
Mm-hmm.
And with nothing to go on, despite their suspicions about the No family and Ida Pruitt, and there's a history with the Pruitt family and of some other stuff that had happened, you know, back in the day, the case just went cold. So the women and the little girl were labeled as missing, presumed dead.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
The not knowing. I still can't imagine. I'd probably say this every time, but the not knowing. Just somebody
seems
just disappears.
Almost harder than finding
out what
closure,
happened.
Because it's closure, at
yeah,
least.
Yeah, exactly. It's
even
like,
if
you
it's
know.
Hard.
Yeah. Wendy's family believed that Wendy, Lisa, and Cynthia had been killed that day, May 29th, 1992, and they were sure that Beverly No and Ida Pruitt had something to do with it. And they figured that Chad either had something to do with it or found out about it after and helped.
I think he probably knew about it, but the way it was worded that he said the last time he saw them was truthful.
Right.
Like maybe he didn't actually kill them.
Yeah.
But he knew what was going to happen or something.
Possibly, yeah. Because he's the one that lured her there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if they'd always made arrangements with Beverly, why would he suddenly decide he needed to be the one to say?
And if she's like, hey, call her, and he'd be like, why?
Yeah.
He would question why he's calling Wendy to let her come visit. And like, he'd question his mother, why am I doing this?
Right.
He's going to know what's going on.
Exactly. So years passed. Every May 29th, Wendy's family lived through the heartache, reliving the emotionally draining experience of not knowing. Wendy's sister, Aisha Hashmi, said, quote, I've had to tell myself to let her go in spirit and say goodbye. I just want to know what happened.
Oh my gosh, that is heartbreaking.
And actually, I don't think I included it in here, but May 29th, a few years ago, Wendy's father actually died on May 29th.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I think just from
natural causes. Like,
yeah, I think it was, you know, because this was, I didn't write it down, but it was 2006 or something. I mean, it was like many years later.
Yeah.
Yeah. In 2007, Beverly No and her mother Ida were arrested for arson, and they both served time for that. They were convicted of burning down their home in Bristow, Oklahoma to collect $83,000 in insurance.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That's unhinged.
Yeah. Yeah. $83,000 in 2007. I wonder what that's worth now.
That's not that much money.
No, it's really not.
Not really.
The family seemed to have issues with burned out homes because the YouTube channel that I was watching that had the case that I mentioned earlier,
mm-hmm.
Ida's great-granddaughter, whose name is Kristen Fox, was interviewed in that YouTube channel video and told a story about her and Jonathan playing when they were kids, because she would have been his cousin.
Mm-hmm.
She said they liked to dig around where a house had been burned down once, because they found like little pieces of glass and just stuff from the house.
Yeah.
And she said one day while they were playing, Jonathan was suddenly like, we shouldn't be digging around here. And she's like, why? Because they'd done it before. And Jonathan said, because we might find my mom and sister out here. And this video, like, on YouTube, it was mostly his family being interviewed. Like, cousins and stuff like that.
Yeah.
There were a couple of Wendy's family, too, but it was mostly his family. And they were all just like, we know they did stuff. We know. The family has a history. There are stories about people hanging in trees. There are stories about just, yeah. So apparently this family was just one of those families that
just
was like,
horrible.
If we don't get our way, we'll just
kill you.
We'll do violence about it. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so there's no movement in the case until March of 2013. according to the arrest warrant application for Beverly Noe, this is where I found this information, on March 28th, 2013, Creek County District Attorney's investigators Andy Howard and Frank Smith interviewed Grover Pruitt. Grover was Beverly's brother.
Okay.
And told the police that he believed his sister and mother had killed the two women and the kid. In 1992, Grover owned 40 acres of land in Pawnee County, Oklahoma. His mother, Ida, had purchased 5 acres of the land and moved a trailer home on it. And a large hole had been dug for a septic tank to be put in, but the hole sat open for a long time. Suddenly, right after the three girls disappeared, Ida ordered Grover to call the backhoe operator and fill in the hole.
Well, if that's not a confession.
Right. So, Grover told the investigators he never looked in the hole after the three women disappeared because he was afraid of what he might see.
I mean, I understand that.
Yeah.
And probably terrified of what his sister and mother would do.
Yeah. Ida never moved into the trailer and eventually sold the property, and Grover agreed to show the investigators where the hole had been. During the same interview on March 28th, 2013, Grover also turned over a Stevens double-barrel 12-gauge sawed-off shotgun. And according to him, the family referred to the shotgun as, quote, Baby. They had a shotgun named Baby.
Creepy.
Yeah, it's a weird family.
Creepy.
So, the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation, OSBI, sent Special Agent Marty Wilson to meet with the investigators Howard and Smith and interview Grover Pruitt again.
Mm-hmm.
This interview, which took place on April 2nd, 2013, Grover explained he had distanced himself from his sister and mother years before and believed they were responsible for the disappearance and murder of the girls.
Mm-hmm.
As the investigators were leaving, Grover shook Smith's hand kind of tightly and leaned in saying, quote, I'm serious, you need to look in that hole. So, on April 4th, 2013, so this is 2 days later, Beverly Noe's ex-husband and Chad's father, Gary, told investigators and Agent Wilson that Beverly told him she'd gone to church and gotten saved, and he told her that she couldn't be saved unless she confessed all her sins. And Beverly allegedly told him, I confessed all my sins except one, and I'm taking that one to the grave. OSBI investigators went to the property that Ida had once owned, and that was on April 15th, 2013. So, they got permission from the new property owners to search the property, including the location of the hole that Ida had once dug. And upon excavating the site, they found the skeletal remains of two women and one child.
Oh my gosh.
Clothing was found with each skeleton, and it matched the outfits that Wendy, Lisa, and Cynthia were wearing, including that red sweatsuit that Wendy had on. They found Cynthia's backpack with her name written inside, and a purse containing a medical ID card for Wendy Camp. Also in the hole was a .357 caliber gun, believed to be a Ruger Security 6, and two kitchen knives. On April 24th, so this was several days after, Grover wore a wire while he spoke with Beverly, and Beverly commented on her mother's tendency to brag, stating, quote, I told her before, more than one time, loose lips sink ships, mama, shut your damn mouth. Grover told Beverly that police had taken guns from his house, and Beverly's response was, quote, well, I don't know why they want the guns when she threw them all in there. On July 26th, 2013, Grover made a sworn statement to investigators that he spoke with Beverly in early April 2013, and she asked where Baby was. Grover told her that OSBI took the sawed-off shotgun and that they wanted the .357 revolver, too. Beverly told him he didn't have to worry about the .357, saying she had used Eddie Bishop's .357 and it couldn't be tied to her. So she basically was just like, oh, well, shotgun's not a big deal, and the revolver, it doesn't matter, I used somebody else's. Yeah.
I just don't even have words.
In his statement, Grover said that he went to his 40-acre property shortly after the disappearances in 1992 to dispose of an old couch and found that Ida was there. And she told him she wanted him to get the backhoe operator to fill in the hole for the septic tank. When he asked her why, she said, because there's a couple bodies in there. I mean, these people were just blatantly like,
did he believe, did he think, well, there's bodies, or was he like?
I think he knew.
He probably knew because of
the big to-do about it and the family's history and So on January 10th, 2014, the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner told Agent Wilson that the remains had been positively identified through DNA as Wendy Camp, Lisa Krager, and 6-year-old Cynthia Brito. March 7th, 2014, the causes of death were released for them. Wendy and Lisa, the cause of death was, for Wendy, it was gunshot wounds and blunt force injuries. For Lisa, it was gunshot wounds. The cause of death for Cynthia was listed as, quote, homicidal violence by unknown means. There wasn't enough evidence on her bones to say what actually killed her. So they don't know if she was shot, if she was bludgeoned, if she was strangled, anything. They don't even know for sure that they were all dead when they went in the hole. There's no way to tell that they weren't possibly breathing. Oh, I didn't even
think about that.
Because there was no soft tissue left, so they couldn't check to see if there was dirt in their lungs or anything. And that's what those two
ladies sound like they would have done.
Yeah.
Like, hurt him just enough to get him in there.
Yeah. It sounds like they're cruel.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So, the manner of death for all three was listed as homicide. So, all that info was from the arrest warrant application for Beverly Noe. Grover Pruitt was arrested as an accessory to first-degree murder on May 2nd, 2013. The charges were due to Grover concealing the fact that the three had been buried on his property over 20 years before.
Mm-hmm.
Grover pled not guilty, and a judge later dismissed the case. Grover actually died January 25th, 2017, still saying he knew his sister and mother were responsible. In May 2013, the OSBI opened another cold case involving Grover's family. So,
really?
Yeah. So this was an interesting little side jaunt here. So Beverly Noe's sister, so Ida's other daughter, Deborah, was 33 years old when her husband, John Rawson, was shot to death in his garage on June 12, 1980. Deborah and her mother, Ida, were arrested on charges of first-degree murder 3 years after his death, but were eventually released. Deborah was actually working for Grover and living on his property when Wendy, Lisa, and Cynthia disappeared. And OSBI agents asked Grover to wear a wire while talking to Deborah so they could try to get information about her husband's murder, but she didn't say anything incriminating. And they think that Grover kind of sabotaged the whole operation, like deliberately kind of played with his microphone or pointed it out to her somehow, but not actually said anything, you know, so that she would see. And she never said anything that incriminated her. John Rawson's murder is still unsolved, but everybody pretty much believes that Ida Pruitt was involved. Ida died of cancer at age 82 in September 2011, while still in prison for the arson conviction. Any answers she had, of course, went to the grave with her. Some of her great-grandchildren had hoped, and these were the ones that were on that video, the YouTube video, had hoped that she would make a deathbed confession, but she didn't. Almost 3 years after her death, on March 28th, 2014, Ida's daughter, Beverly Noe, was arrested and charged with 3 counts of first-degree murder. Unfortunately, because so many years had passed, the district attorney decided to offer her a plea bargain. And he did this because Grover was unable to testify because of medical issues at the time. He couldn't testify. The district attorney was like, people's memories fades, people have passed away. So basically to give Wendy and Lisa's families closure and to make sure that something stuck and not risk her getting off completely, they did a plea bargain for her. So on January 20th, 2015... she was sentenced to 15 years in prison, followed by 15 years of probation. In exchange, she, Beverly, who was 67 at this point, pled no contest to the charges. Oklahoma News 9 said in court that Beverly told her attorney, quote, that looks like what's-her-face's people there in the front row, referring to Wendy's husband, Leon, and her family. And the only reason I put that in there is because I was like, that I can just see
that's
just
so
her snide, nasty.
Yeah.
Looks like what's-her-face's people. You mean the woman that you murdered? her and her sister-in-law and her tiny little six-year-old daughter that had nothing to do with anything.
That's crazy. And the mother of your grandson?
Yeah.
Like, that alone.
Yeah, and it's not like Wendy was abusive or something, or neglectful, or just not around. She was in a coma.
She was in a freaking coma.
You know? It wasn't her decision. So she was sentenced to 15 years, followed by 15 years of probation.
15 years? That's bull.
I mean, yeah, it's ridiculous. And I get why they did the plea bargain.
Yeah, I get it.
Because there was the chance that there wouldn't be enough evidence and that sort of thing. Especially because the property wasn't actually Beverly's. It was Ida's, and she was dead. And it was Grover's, and he wasn't medically able to testify. And so, just in case.
I get it.
You know.
But I don't like it.
I know. Yeah. But, yeah, and then that comment she made, it shows that she had no remorse and no respect. She did not care.
No.
I mean, she could have said, that looks like Wendy's people over there. But no, it's what's her face.
Yeah.
So she makes me ill. I hate that I share a name with this woman. Unfortunately, she only served a fraction of the sentence she was given.
Because?
Due to her age and, quote, health issues, she was released from prison on January 7th, 2020.
3 years?
So she was sentenced on January 20th, 2015.
Oh, 5 years.
And, yeah, and was released January of 2020. So, yeah, almost 5 years. And then she lived another three because she died October 13th, 2023.
Oh, my gosh. That was just last year.
Yeah. Yeah, and this all happened in 1992. And she ended up serving a little less than 5 years because of health issues and her age. But then she was alive another 3 years. I'm like, she could have lived another 3 years in prison. Jonathan Noe, having been raised by Beverly, believed that she was not guilty of the crime, according to a news article from 2013. I couldn't find anything more up to date about him, about what he believed or what his views were. I saw some stuff that he had gotten into legal trouble and stuff, but I don't know if that was accurate, because I would think that there's more than one Jonathan Noe in the United States.
Oh my gosh, I've changed my daggone name.
I know. And then Chad Noe, Wendy's ex-husband, was never charged. And that's the story of Wendy Camp, Lisa Krieger, and little six-year-old Cynthia Brito.
What a daggone travesty.
Yeah. This is... I actually, the YouTube video was the first thing I saw about this. It's a channel called Very Local, and it's a segment or a series that they call Hometown Tragedy.
Oh, okay.
And I watched this and I was like, how could a woman who had kids, she was Chad's mother, kill these two young women and a child?
Yeah.
And I guess that's why she was mad that Leon wanted to go, was because she was like, no, I'm going to kill Wendy. I don't want to have to deal with you. You
know? Yeah, like, you're way harder
so
to kill.
So I guess when the other two came, she was like, well, I guess it'll just be as easy killing another, 20-something-year-old and a 6-year-old.
Well, and it makes you wonder, did she really love Jonathan at all? Like,
I know.
That's scary to think that she had complete custody.
Yeah, because that's his half-sister.
Yeah.
And obviously, if she can kill a 6-year-old child, then what happens if he makes her mad?
Yeah. Or even, like, once he's older and he's not a little kid anymore.
Yeah. But I think that she looked at him as hers. I think she thought, this is my child. Because, her kid
was
growing
up. Because she did raise him.
Yeah, she raised him. So I think that she looked at him as her own and was just like, no, his mom can't have him back.
And then her own mother was a hot mess.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So she had that as her role model.
Yeah, exactly.
Not as an excuse at all, but still.
Yeah. But, yeah, and then they had, like I said, they had the place that had burned down that the great-granddaughter mentioned and said that Jonathan said my sister and mom might be down there or something.
Wonder
and
how
then
old
they
were when
were
they...
convicted of arson and then, like, you know.
How old was Jonathan, did they say, at that time when he was playing with his cousin or whatever and said that?
I think she said that they were, like, 10 or 12. He was a little bit older than her, I think.
But... then later on, he's like, I don't think that
they did it.
They did it?
Yeah. So, and I wonder if he, because he was 4 when they were killed.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if at some point he thought that they had, or if he was raised in an environment where it wasn't a big deal.
Right?
Because the rest of the family, you know, like, Ida was, like, real super cash about telling Grover, oh, there's a couple bodies in there. That's why I want the whole
shell
naming
that sawed-off shotgun and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, like, this is baby. Baby can take
care of people. Yeah, that's true, because if that's what he's known, which is almost all he's ever... It is all he's ever known. Because she was only... It was like a month.
Yeah, he was a month old when she basically took him in. And Wendy's family arranged that with her. When Wendy went into the coma, they were like, we'll take care of Cynthia. Yeah, they were like, we'll take care of Cynthia. Can you take care of Jonathan or help Chad with Jonathan? And she said, well, of course, I'll be happy to help.
Well, and it's another boy. So then she had her little baby boy back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Creepy.
And I didn't put this in there because I only saw it in one source and I don't know how accurate it is. But at one point, Wendy's family suspected that Chad slipped drugs to her and that's what triggered her MS. Yeah. But I also read that MS can be triggered by childbirth.
Oh, that's terrifying.
Yeah. So apparently she didn't know she had it.
It was like dormant or whatever.
When it triggered, it was like, oh, I'm having trouble swallowing or whatever. And then boom, she's in a coma for 16 months.
That is horrible.
Yeah. That's scary. So I don't know a lot about MS and I was going to look it up and then I was like, I'm already going down a rabbit hole with this.
Yeah.
And then when I saw the other case about the... about Beverly's sister Deborah and her ex-husband having been shot to death, and I was like, oh my god. I mean, like, it's just all around this family. It seems like to me that that guy probably was killed by Ida Pruitt.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll never know because she's gone. Grover's dead. Beverly's dead. Deborah wouldn't respond to
interview
requests.
She's not going
to say
anything anyway.
Yeah. And if she was involved, she sure as hell isn't going to say anything.
Yeah.
And that was in 1980. This was 12 years before Wendy and Lisa and Cynthia's deaths.
Yeah, they definitely have a history of...
just being shitty people.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see this as a, like, made-for-TV movie.
That's exactly what it sounds
like. About,
like
this Oklahoma family that was, like, a bunch of kooks and murderers and stuff.
Makes me think of, like, the horror movies... where the whole family is, like, nuts, and they get hitchhikers or whatever.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of something like
exactly,
that.
Exactly, yeah.
Because they all just... a mess.
Yeah.
A mess.
But, I mean, when it starts at the top and trickles down, like, you know, when
well, if that's all these people know, generation after generation, again, not an excuse, but that is what it is.
Yeah. Well, and the great-grandchildren and stuff that were being interviewed on that YouTube video... Mm-hmm. We're just basically like, the buck stops here.
Yeah, we ain't
They're
doing
like,
this no
we
more.
Know the history, and we suspect that, you know, that they got the right person when Beverly was arrested, and that Ida probably did have something to do with it.
And now they're all gone.
And, yeah, and they're like, so, you know, we, basically it all stops here. We're not, you know, like, we're making sure that the rest of the family doesn't live that kind of life. Because they're like, we all heard stories growing up. About different illegal activities and, like, even, like, moonshining and stuff during Prohibition and
so
just different...
way far back.
Like, the whole family just all the way back.
Well, it makes me wonder, though, if Jonathan's still going to go down that path if he's possibly had issues with the police or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I said, I couldn't find anything really on him that was recent that I know for sure was him.
Yeah.
So, he might have been involved in drugs or whatever. I mean... unfortunately, also, little small towns and stuff, that kind of stuff happens because there's just so little to do.
Yeah.
And finding jobs is difficult, and so, you know, people fall into that kind of mess, but...
yeah.
I don't know. I hope that he got it all situated. I suspected Chad knew more than he let on.
I agree
and like you said,
that.
He was truthful in the polygraph, but one, polygraphs are not that reliable.
It's like, you ask... do you have any knowledge of what happened to them?
It's like yes or no questions.
Yeah, you can't, because he can, how it was said is like, no, I didn't see him after that.
Yeah, exactly.
And he truly didn't see them, then he's not lying.
Yeah. Do you know if they're buried in that hole? I don't know. When was the last time you saw them when they were leaving the house, your mother's house? Yes. Oh, he was being truthful. Yeah, maybe he didn't see them, because they... I mean, I would assume if you were hiring a backhoe operator to come in and fill up a hole, you would have put dirt on top of them first.
You would think.
Because it's like, unless you know the backhoe operator's cousin Bob or something, right, that won't care either because he's part of the family. Who knows? It's crazy.
It is crazy. I'm so glad that they have the closure, though, of knowing that it was them, yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But they don't have to wonder anymore.
Exactly. And everybody believes that they got the right person. The only thing that they kind of, like, are eh about is that Chad never got charged with anything.
Yeah.
And they think that he did know more than he let on.
He just had knowledge, most likely, probably, but not...
And possibly after the fact.
Yeah.
It could it was after, you know. Because maybe Beverly was like, I'm not calling that bitch. Maybe she was like, you call her and tell her she can come visit him. So, and you know, if she said it like that, then maybe that's the way he was like, okay.
I don't know. It's just weird for him to even...
You know, they said that that they would make arrangements with Beverly, but maybe they made them through him most of the time. I don't know.
But he wasn't even around.
I know. But he was there that day.
So weird.
Yeah.
Just weird.
Yeah.
Because it's out of the ordinary, and that's usually and means something
that was,
is
part
up.
Part of it was that they were like, well, maybe if he calls her and says, hey, I'm going to come to mom's, you can come on down and see Jonathan for a while, and, you know, because I'm going to be there too, maybe that would, like, make her feel more secure.
And, like, okay, well, because
she knew Beverly, you know, didn't like her, and she didn't like Beverly back, and so she might have been a little more comfortable knowing that Chad was going to be there and kind of be
a buffer, I don't know why.
You know.
But, yeah. I guess.
Because they loved each other at one point, but even though he freaking just noped right on out of there when she fell into a coma.
I mean, the last name should have been a red flag.
I know, right? I'm like, it says it in the last name.
Literally.
Just say no.
Man, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, you're
incredibly
welcome.
Sad, frustrating story.
Yeah. And I'm sorry that her name was Beverly, because it was a good name until she had it.
Yeah, agreed.
But, okay, well, I guess we'll talk to everybody else later.
See you guys later.
Watch for deer. Thank you.